Welcome to Parents Perspective. Five-year-old Donnie came running into the house sobbing. His mom came rushing into the kitchen to see what was wrong.
I heard, he trembled, an airplane. It was coming to our house. Tommy ran into his house and I came home.
He burst into fresh tears and collapsed into his mother's arms. Sweetie, his mom spoke to him as softly as she could, that was a plane just taking people to meetings or on visits. No one bad is going to make the plane come down on our house. Donnie sniffed in response. But silently his mom wondered, how long would Donnie panic every time a plane flew overhead? Terrorism, she mused, is certainly an equal opportunity disaster. But how can we help our kids? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest today is one of the most helpful people we know when it comes to dealing with trauma and grief. Linda Goldman is the author of Life and Loss, A Guide to Help Grieving Children, Breaking the Silence, A Guide to Help Children with Complicated Grief, and Bart Speaks Out on Suicide. She's a grief therapist in private practice in the Washington, D.C. area. Linda is also the mother of a teenaged son. Welcome to Parents Perspective, Linda.
Thank you.
When there's breaking news about terrorism, it's almost impossible to completely shield our kids from the information, and sometimes even from the images. How can we best help them handle what they see and hear?
I think one of the best ways to help them handle what they see and hear is recognize that they are seeing and hearing. So often the adult world feels that children, especially young children, won't take in what's around them. But what we have found as from toddlers on up, there was a very well-defined experience that they had from the terrorist attack. I think that one thing we can do is be sure that we monitor what the children see and hear as well as we can, because today's children had watched the visuals from the media over and over and over again. And so many young children felt that whenever they saw the video of the terrorist attack, it was actually happening again. So monitor, limit, use TV as a teachable moment, that if the children are seeing and hearing what's happening, open it up for family discussions. I think another thing that we can do is to help maintain the routines for our children, to create spaces in the day that are familiar and comfortable and safe. Take extra time when riding in the car, which is a wonderful place to be with kids, to discuss these topics where there are no interruptions, and be sure to ask the children how they perceive what happened, because so often children may misperceive events.
Can you give an example of how they might misperceive something like that?
I'm thinking of two examples. One was a young boy named Carlos. He was 4 years old. And his teacher asked him to draw a picture of what he thought happened with the World Trade Center. And he started to draw the picture, and then he began to cry. And she said, why are you crying? He said, I can't draw this picture. The towers are too big.
Oh, interesting.
Because he took it literally. Yeah. Another example is a child that lived in Colombia. He called his grandmother living in the United States crying and crying after he saw the terrorist attack. And the grandmother said, well, why are you crying? He said, I saw the plane crash into the World Trade Center, and now I'll never be able to visit you.
Because he felt that was the only plane.
He felt that was the only plane that was coming to America. And so.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. And so I could go on and on, but I think one of our best tips is to ask children, tell me what you think happened, and listen to their response. I think that's a clue, as well as I always find that children's questions are really a reflection of their inner thoughts and feelings, so that if we can create a safe space to listen, respect, and respond to their questions, we can also find out how they're integrating the information.
We know that children process grief and trauma differently from adults, but can you go over how they exactly process it? We know we're supposed to look out for something, but we're not exactly sure what.
Yes. I also want to differentiate just for a moment a slight difference between grief and trauma. As the terrorist attack happened and we're dealing more deeply with trauma in children, there is a difference. With grief, I think the overriding feeling is sadness. I think with trauma, the overriding feeling is terror. And all too often, the trauma of an event and the terror that comes from the event may freeze the grief feelings. And so I'll just say that first and then begin to answer.
Do you mean freeze the grief feelings by not letting the grief feelings take their natural progression?
Yeah. Okay. They wouldn't take their natural flow because the terror is so great that children get stuck and stopped that trauma.
And it can happen for months and months?
Yes, trauma can happen for months and months and years and years, and so can grief. And, of course, the closer that a child is to the actual event, knowing some person, being in closer proximity, probably the greater the traumatic event will be. But also, after the events of 9/11, what we found is that now 9/11 acts as a traumatic overlay for all of the pre-existing conditions that the children had before 9/11. So a child whose mom was killed in a plane crash 2 years ago and then revisits it by seeing all the visuals and the media about what happened with the terrorist attack probably will re-grieve her mom's death and the trauma, may regress, may show the same signs that she had when the initial event happened in her life. As far as children and their processes for grieving and exploring trauma, you know, children grieve and work through trauma a lot through play. And I would say that is one of the major differences, that what may appear to be a frivolous play activity may in effect be a very good way that children are working through their grief and trauma. For example, Tony comes into my grief therapy office and he says, "I really miss my mom. His mom died in the terrorist crash." I said, "Tony, why don't you give her a call?" And handed Tony a toy telephone.
How old is Tony?
Tony's 5. He immediately begins to role play what most grieving children do, this ongoing, ever-present relationship with their person that died. "Hi, Mom. How are you? Are you okay?"
Oh, my gosh.
"I'm okay." And one question that children have, and they've had after the terrorist attack, is, "Did my person suffer? Were you thinking of me before you died? What were you thinking?"
Which is very adult, really. It's the kind of thing adults were dealing with during this period.
But interestingly enough, it's also very children. It's the question that they usually ask, "Did my person suffer? Mm. What were they thinking?"
Isn't that interesting? More prominently than, "Oh dear, now I'm going to be left alone," or "Who will take care of me?" Or
I think it's an overriding concern if their person suffered. I think I can't say whether it's more predominant, but it's one of the common signs of grieving children that they will ask those questions. One child had her friend and her friend's parents killed in the terrorist crash. They were on the plane that crashed into the Pentagon. And she was very concerned. She wanted to know if her friend suffered. She wanted to know if she was sitting with her parents. And she drew a picture of the plane crashing into the Pentagon with the question, "What were they thinking when this happened?" And all I asked this little girl is, "What is it that you would like to know?"
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on helping kids respond to terrorism.
Two excellent books written by hosts Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, are available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with grief therapist Linda Goldman about helping kids respond to terrorism.
Another thing about children grieving differently than adults is that they like to role play. They like to use projective play. So we have found that kids that are working through their grief process of knowing about the terrorist attack often built Legos in kindergarten and then took toy airplanes and crashed the planes. They would say to their teacher or their moms, "You know, buildings go boom, buildings blow up." Just my stressing that young children are very aware.
When does that cut off, this business about needing to role play and so forth? Is it before middle school?
I'm not so sure that it cuts off. I think that when you watch on a continuum, children through their friends, through pretending. I just gave a training with TAPS, Tragedy Assistance Program, survivors for the military. And every adult in the training had kids who had a parent or a grandparent die from the terrorist attack. And what the parents kept saying is their kids, and not only 5-year-olds, but 8-year-olds, 12-year-olds, played with their friends a kind of game of, I want to grow up and kill the terrorists. I want to pretend that I'm killing the terrorists. I heard that kids that were children of firemen and policemen that died would keep acting out role-playing about saving people the way their fathers did during the attack. I think older kids need to work out what they saw and experienced, maybe not so much in role-playing, but in ways of producing empathy and understanding other cultures by dialoguing about those kinds of things, by speaking of feelings that kids would normally feel. One really deep example of what is common for children under these situations of any age is feelings of revenge.
That's what I was going to ask about, anger.
And anger. And it gets very, very scary for them, as for the adults around them.
Now, are the kids who are connected to the firefighters and the policemen, people who were trying to save people, are those kids also as likely to have anger?
Very much so. And anger in the extreme of revenge. Nice kids want to go kill terrorists. They want to murder the people that murdered their dad. Now, we need to create a space where children can express these feelings safely and begin to feed into them ways to work with their anger in a healthy way, and also think about how we can work towards other ways of solving our problems besides violence.
Mm-hmm. It would seem to me that this would apply across the board to kids who just witnessed this on television, who didn't have anybody who was killed or injured.
It does apply across the board. And I think that's why when we ask ourselves, who's responsible for working with anger, who's responsible for working with these feelings, it's not only a therapist, it's not only a counselor, it's not only a school nurse, but it is educators and parents working across the board with awareness that this is what our children are feeling. When I spoke to these parents, their main concern was the angry feelings that their kids have and what can they do about them. Because in many school systems, it's very hard to deal with angry children. And yet this is common for what they're going through. One mother expressed deep concern that her son keeps saying he wants to grow up and kill terrorists. And she doesn't want her son, of course, to grow up with all of these hard, hard feelings. My suggestion for young children with anger is get a punching bag. Have it in your home. The Dougie Center, which is a home for grieving children, has an entire padded room where children can go in and really work through their anger in safe ways. There's an entire wall where children can throw paint in a safe way. One can make aggression cookies with their children. It's a way of using dough to knead things and work through their anger in that way. And then, of course, there are many ways that we can use to help children draw their angry feelings and express their angry feelings in a safe way.
What about older kids, middle schoolers and high schoolers, who are having these strong feelings of anger and need for revenge?
I think that's where we talk a lot about what is mediation. What are our ways that we can use with our older kids, that they can begin to develop with open minds so that our world can become a more peaceful place. There's a poem by Sheldon Silverstein, which I think is a lovely poem. It's called No Difference. And it talks about all different races, colors, sizes, and how when we go to turn off the light, we're all really the same. And I think if we start with all of our children and pursue and expand this in middle school and high school to develop ways to stop prejudice, stop bullying, work with programs within the school. Terrorism is a magnitude of bullying. And if we can talk about bullying and victimization issues with our young children and create empathy for other sides, other feelings, other ways of looking at things, I think we can create a goal of world peace, hopefully one day. Hmm. One school system worked very well with the terrorist attack. One little girl was a survivor, as I had mentioned, of a dear friend who was killed. This little girl wrote a beautiful poem about her friend. The school system created a poster contest. Kids really do make a difference. And they allowed this little girl to be the judge. And it was a wonderful way to reframe her sorrow and her trauma in a way that she could feel strong, productive, and that she lived through this experience.
So it sounds like the older the kids are, the more effective doing something like writing in a journal or writing a poem or something that they can create
yes.
would be helpful.
And ask children for suggestions. One little girl, after the terrorist attack, said, you know, everybody likes brownies. I think that we should have a brownie sale. She did that, and she managed to raise quite a good sum of money for the firemen and the policemen in New York. One little boy, when asked, what do you think you could do to help? He said, I think we should buy all the firemen new gloves and send them Gatorade. And so, you know, if we can allow children to voice their suggestions, we're empowering them to feel they have some control over a very large situation. One little girl decided to write a letter to President Bush. She said, Dear President Bush, I don't understand why the terrorists did this. Do you? I'm very sad about it. Are you sad too? Sometimes if you need more help, you can always talk to your parents. Oh. Maybe you should talk to your mom and dad and ask for advice. Love, Megan.
That's a great letter.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on helping kids respond to terrorism.
For an audio cassette copy of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with grief therapist Linda Goldman about helping kids respond to terrorism. Linda, what are some of the different phases of grief that people go through?
Well, let me clarify that, yes, people and especially children do go through different phases of grief. And I will tell you those phases, but I wanted to be sure that there was an awareness that phases are not linear, that children aren't going to go through the first stage, shock and disbelief, to the last phase of hopefulness and reorganization in a linear fashion. And even though there's the second stage of despair and disorganization and then coming together and searching and yearning for different ways to justify what has happened. I find that when our children are going on the metro and there's a terrorist alert that weekend, and you walk into the metro station and you see terrorist alert, it re-triggers all of the shock and disbelief that the children may have felt when they originally experienced 9/11.
So they can have pockets where they regress or they go back to a different stage.
Yes. That the children can, of course, see the hopefulness of clearing where the World Trade Centers were, all the work that went into it, all the wonderful models of heroes that we had, and how we are thinking about rebuilding that. And yet, when there's an alert that there may be a terrorist attack, the thought of having another building be crushed is very scary. And that's a piece of being aware, as you so nicely told the story of the little boy that was so frightened when an airplane went overhead. One family who thought that they had really gained some distance on the terrorist attack, when mom had left a 13-year-old and a 6-year-old home, the kids were home alone and they heard an airplane flying overhead. They went and locked themselves in a closet until Mom came home, so terrified that the terrorists were coming.
Oh, and that's interesting because that's two different age groups.
Right.
You wouldn't think they would have the same reaction.
They had the same reaction.
Yeah.
Linda, how is it comforting to children if adults tell them the truth that we don't know if or when another terrorist attack might occur? Doesn't that just increase a child's anxiety?
I think whenever we speak about children and anxiety, I think it's important to tell them the truth age appropriately so. Mm-hmm. I think that we don't need to go into more detail than is necessary. And oftentimes, a young child might ask a question and be satisfied with a very simple answer. I find that today's kids are very savvy, and that if we think that we can hide the truth about what's happening in the news and the threat of nuclear war, terrorism, and what we went through with biological warfare, then I think that we're not giving our kids enough credit. I think that when we talk to children, I have found that if we don't tell them the truth age appropriately so, they have another secondary loss, and that's the loss of the trust of their emotional environment. And then we are leaving for them the path to gather the facts about what's happening through friends, through the media, through resources where we don't have our own input.
Well, what about kids who are riding on the subway and they could be 7 or 8 or 10 or something, and they see, you know, threat of terrorist attack, be alert or something like that? How do they deal with that if an adult says, yes, indeed, we don't know if another terrorist attack is going to come today or tomorrow or something?
I think that what we have to do continually, because this is an ongoing trauma that has not ended and probably will not end for quite some time, is to continue to reinforce what we are doing as a country and a world that is protecting ourselves from terrorist attack, that we do have more security, that sometimes when one says there is an alert, it also means that security is stepped up to help us be safe, that we have survived the terrorist attack and here we are, and that life goes on, that we live with risks, and we lived with the risks before the terrorist attack. We take a risk when we go into our car, and that's why we wear a seatbelt, and we need to continue to live our lives knowing that our adult world, our government, and governments throughout our planet are working together to stop terrorists.
Well, on that wonderful, wonderful note, parents out there, I know, are thinking to themselves, well, if we could package Mrs. Goldman, this would be wonderful, but we'd probably have to think about some other resources that would be helpful. So what kinds of things would you recommend for parents to help themselves and help their kids?
Okay. I love collecting children's resources on grief and trauma issues and wish I could give you hundreds that I have in my office, but I will give you a few that I find so helpful. The first is called The Hurt by Teddy Dolesky.
Can you spell his last name?
And his last name is spelled Dolesky. I think it's a book that's good for children from 5 to 105 mm-hmm. because it addresses what happens when we feel hurt and we don't talk about it. And in this book, this little boy feels hurt about a fight with a friend, and the hurt becomes a very cold stone in his hand, and he doesn't talk about it. And the hurt gets so big, it takes over his room, and he gets so scared about it that he realizes he needs to talk to his dad about it. And once he does, the hurt gets smaller. And the more he talks about it, the hurt gets smaller until finally he opens up his window and lets the hurt out and realizes even though he'll have more hurts, if he begins to talk about it, they can never get that big. One wonderful resource for children about death is called When Dinosaurs Die. And it's by Mark and Laura Brown. And it really addresses the true questions the children have about death and grief. I love this book called A Terrible Thing Happened by Margaret Holmes. It's a good book for working with young children about trauma because it doesn't really address a specific trauma, but allows the child to project whatever their trauma is that's going on with them into the story. I also would like to recommend two children's books that I've found that specifically deal with the 9/11 tragedy. The first is called September 11th, 2001. It was written by Nancy Poffenberger, P-O-F-F-E-N-B-E-R-G-E-R, And it talks about how kids feel about 9/11 and also uses actual children's drawings to express how they felt about that. The other book is called It's Still a Dog's New York, a book of healing by Susan Roth, that talks about how this little dog feels visiting New York after 9/11, how sad it is, how good he feels about all the heroes, and how they are working on rebuilding their wonderful city. For adults, a book that I feel is very helpful, as we talked about the great degree of anger and revenge that kids might feel from this grief and trauma, is a book called A Volcano in My Tummy, Helping Children to Handle Anger. And it's by Whitehouse and Pudney. Pudney, and it gives different processes that you can use with children to work through anger. I think for older kids, a journal called Fire in My Heart, Ice in My Veins by Enid Traisman.
Can you spell that?
Traisman.
Okay.
Would be very helpful for kids that would like to record their thoughts and feelings in high school about their trauma.
Linda, could you mention some helpful websites in addition to the books?
Yes, I'll actually mention my own website. It's called Helping Children Deal with Grief. It's www.arrows.com/L Gold. Another website which I think is important for people to know about is www.adec.org. And ADEC is the Association for Death Education and Counseling. And I think it is one of the leading associations that can create and provide resources and information on working with children in grief. I also want to mention the organization TAPS, the Tragedy Assistance Program for the Military. One other resource on the internet is from a wonderful organization called Kids Peace, which is an advocate for all children. They've created a helpline.
Can you spell it? It's peace with P-E-A-C-E?
Yes, it's a K-I-D-S and then a capital P-E-A-C-E, Kids Peace. Their helpline is 1-800-334-4KID. They also have a website, www.kidspeace.org. And I think they provide many beneficial services, including helping children with their feelings and thoughts about the terrorist attack.
Well, these are wonderful resources, and of course, you have been the most wonderful resource of all. So many thanks to Linda Goldman for this encouraging advice and helping our children through these traumatic times. Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Washington, D.C. with Kids. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address, and mention show number 152. Tell us, if you can, what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you are tuning into. Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids are both available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents' Perspective and our books, Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, http://i.am/parentsperspective. That's http://i.am/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.